The last soldier has gone to his eternal reward, yet the nation still remembers World War I. Now that remembrance is official, the National Archives and Records Administration is in the midst of a centennial retrospective on what was called the Great War even before it was over. Rob D'Alessandro is acting chairman of the U.S. World War I Centennial Commission at NARA. He joins us now. Rob, good morning.
Good morning, Tom. How are you?
All right. So tell us what's going on. You've already had a couple of events in June. Now we're just before the Guns of August commemoration. What's going on?
We are. We have a lot going on. Let me just take a step back. The Centennial Commission is a congressional commission, and although the National Archives and Records Administration is a partner of the organization, we're a national overarching organization that's charged with working to commemorate this great moment in American history. And let me say that our work is focused really on encouraging private organizations, state and local government, educational organizations to organize and participate in activities that commemorate this centennial. We're also asked to facilitate and coordinate activities throughout the United States relating to the centennial, serving as a clearinghouse for information and collection and dissemination of that information about events and plans for the centennial, and finally, developing recommendations for Congress and the President for commemorating the centennial of the World War. Now, that said, really, this has a leadership, a communication component, and an educational component, and finally, a coordination component to our work. And I think that's what you're touching on. And the commission has really taken a docket that's very aggressive in getting out and exposing awareness and our youth, and often for the first time, to this watershed moment in American history.
Now, if you go around the nation, I mean, almost every town has some kind of commemoration. It might be a sign marking a square for someone from World War I. Maybe there's an obelisk. But I imagine most people sort of pass it without really seeing it.
You know, you're hitting right on this. You've probably read our playbook. The problem is that this is a largely forgotten war, largely overshadowed by World War II. That, you know, the World War II period is, if you will, a quote-unquote good war where the country pulled together and won. Unfortunately, in modern times, World War I is either characterized as nothing more than a prologue to World War II, or it's characterized as a mistake. We were warned by our founding fathers not to get involved in the affairs of Europe. We made this breach in judgment. We're not going to do it again. Well, guess what? We did a few years later. But I agree with you completely, and I would challenge someone, every small town, the little town that I sometimes go to in Southern Virginia, there's a very small spot that memorializes those casualties there that were a consequence of the Meuse-Argonne offensive. And sure, 100 people pass that memorial every day, and they don't even look at it. You're exactly correct on that. That is the heart of our challenge as a commission. It's make people understand that this was the moment in American history.
Now, what sort of resources does NARA itself have? What kinds of records and materials do you have that can aid these efforts at the other levels of government?
Well, NARA is just one of our partner organizations, but they have a rich collection of World War I material, photographic material, documents, archival material, records of the individual soldiers in some cases, although some of those were compromised, as you may well know, in a fire. They have a wealth of information for scholars, for interested parties, for those that want to get the word out. But that's just one of the tools in our toolbox. We're working very closely with the Library of Congress, who also has a fantastic collection and is also working to not only launch an exhibit on this, but publish a book with the services, the Army, Navy, Marine Corps, Air Force, Coast Guard, and a number of organizations throughout the country that are interested stakeholders. Right here in Washington, for instance, the Woodrow Wilson House is a great example. We're partnering with the National Cathedral. We're really reaching out to as many places as we can to touch those and ignite an interest in this war. And Tom, if I may, you know, if I sound excited about this, this is the war that results in an American century. World War II is a maturation period of America's new role. I like to say, yes, we have the moniker of the greatest generation. These are the parents of the greatest generation, and they rear those children with the lessons learned of this period of great change in America.
And I guess most of the military leaders, the general officers of World War II, cut their teeth in or even before World War I.
Absolutely. The George Marshalls, even Eisenhower, who is convinced his career is over because he doesn't deploy and is training soldiers in Pennsylvania. The Eisenhowers, the Marshalls, the Clarks, the MacArthurs, all of those great names of World War II learn their craft in the trenches of World War I or in the organization and training and buildup of World War I.
Now, we should point out that you are actually director of the U.S. Army Center of Military History at Fort McNair right here in D.C.
Yes, I guess you can guess that when I come to the military aspect of this. And I am, and I love that facet. It's a good partnership. I am changing jobs soon, and I'm going over to the American Battlefield Monuments Commission, and I'm very excited about that because, of course, their role and mission is that of preserving the grave sites of the fallen, both here in the States, not so much to the VA cemeteries, a couple of sites, but the fallen of World War I overseas and the overseas cemeteries.
We're speaking with Rob D'Alessandro. He is D'Alessandro, acting chairman of the U.S. World War I Centennial Commission. But my question was, to what degree do the lessons learned in World War I inform military doctrine today, if they do at all?
Well, you know, there's a strange parallel between what we're seeing today in the world, and boy, what a day to talk about World War I, and what we saw in 1914, 15, 16, 17, 18, that both the political side and the military side look at. I think there are scary parallels to today. Of course, there's no, you know, nothing's going to follow, but boy, as Mark Twain said, history sure does rhyme, doesn't it? And it's interesting that the military took very little out of World War I post-World War I. The lesson learned post-World War I was we can't afford to get locked in trench warfare anymore. Well, today I think we're playing that same game, except you could change it a little and say we can't get locked into a long occupation anymore. We've got to get in and out. And so it's kind of interesting to see how the military reacts to wars of this nature.
Getting back to the commemoration, now the United States' involvement really is 1917 or a couple of years hence, even though the war in Europe started much earlier. So what will happen, what do you hope would happen by 2017?
Don't, Tom, I do the same thing all the time.
Well, those of us born in the last century, you know, kind of that's what we do.
What we hope is, first of all, we have a very aggressive program that starts this year. In fact, we have a program in Kansas City on July 27th that Barbara Pinto will moderate a panel that includes Mitch Yokelson from the National Archives and Chad Williams and some others out in Kansas City at our World War I National Museum. So I'd encourage people to come to our website, www.worldwar1, that's the number, centennial.org. But having said that, back to your question, we want to timeline this so that we kind of build up to American entry in 17. So by April of 17, we're going to host symposia and programs, and you'll just see all kinds of things coming on because we don't want to pop out in 17 with no background context. When we leave the centennial in 18, our goal will be to ignite an interest in this period and awareness in this period to a whole new generation of Americans. You know, I want to close with a remark, if I could, because I know we're almost out of time, talking about World War I in the period. And there was a World War I veteran that bemoaned that before June of 1944, everyone in America knew that the pivotal battle in American history was fought at the Meuse-Argonne. By July and August of that year, 1944, America knew its most desperate struggle was fought on the beaches of Normandy.
And then later the Battle of the Bulge, I guess, is
absolutely
a lot of battles all characterized
right,
together.
And you know, sure, World War I is as day not follows night to World War II, but we have to understand that it's the first time that women and minorities and immigrants served in our military and served in our government in great numbers to, if you will, pull together and win.
And I guess it's also perhaps one of the first examples of long-distance force projection since the United States was in Europe.
In great numbers, correct. Absolutely. I mean, in earlier times, there were smaller expeditions, but this is one where the thought is to bring a 2-million-man force over to Europe, but plus, and our first real universal draft. The Civil War draft is far from universal.
And also, just give us, before we close, some of the statistics, because as you say, it really was more than a prelude to the other World War in terms of the number of casualties.
Oh, you know, casualties are hard to put your finger on in World War I for any number of reasons, part of which is the pandemic flu. So they swing widely, but millions fall overseas. The United States will end up mobilizing about 4 million people for this war. About 2 will get overseas. Of that 2, about 275,000 African Americans will serve. This is, you know, a far cry from a number of regiments and the small contingent of U.S. colored troops that will fight in the Civil War. In those numbers are women for the first time serving overseas as nurses. 2 American women are wounded, one quite seriously. Of course, one will be felled by the flu. But this is the first time that America has to come to grips with battles resulting in huge numbers of casualties and moments in time where we have to ask ourselves, are we doing the right thing?
And now, it's just too bad Frank Buckles didn't quite make it to this year.
It is. I knew Frank, and I'll tell you, he felt the same way the commission does, in the sense of, we don't want this generation to be a forgotten generation. America changed significantly after the World War. And Frank understood that, and we want to make the rest of the country understand it. So that's the importance of this commemoration to us.
Rob D'Alessandro is acting chairman of the U.S. World War I Centennial Commission from NARA. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Tom.